This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 24th of July 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week? Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Jackie Donnellan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So we begin with all our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And as you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can usually access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. In recent weeks, we've had great difficulty with downloading our recordings. We're working very hard to rectify this problem. We think we may have solved it, but we have to wait and see. Right, so on please with our headline stories. The first headline story is from Deborah. What is your headline story, please?
Chef hit with ban from running businesses. A chef who set up three restaurants in the Winchester area has been handed a 10-year ban by the insolvency service after failing to repay two COVID loans and register for VAT. Lenny Carl Roberts, who was director of Shoal, the Bugle Inn in Twyford and the Fox in Crawley, has been stripped of his position after the infringements. However, the chef, who trained at the London fine dining mecca, Le Gavroche, with the likes of Gordon Ramsay and Marco Pierre White, has told the Chronicle of the chaotic system under which bounce-back loans, BBLs, were awarded during the pandemic. Mr. Carl Roberts was awarded two £50,000 loans through his company LCR Investments, but says this was what he calls an administrative error by HMRC. We applied for the BBL from Barclays and we heard nothing for 2 weeks, he said. We then applied for another BBL from Santander. Both came through after another week. Then Mr. Carl Roberts claims he tried to pay back one of them immediately, but was told he could not. At the time, there was no way of physically paying the money back. We didn't accept it, we just couldn't give it back. Soon, COVID started to take its toll. That time of COVID was absolutely horrendous for all pubs. Pubs are closing at 23 a week in the UK, so I'm glad we got through it. Mr. Carl Roberts also detailed issues with the furlough system, which he says led to his company's ballooning debt. Through a return of post error, he said, the company was not granted furlough during the first lockdown. In spite of this, the chef kept his full staff on at great expense. Eventually, he was awarded furlough during the second lockdown, but by the time the pandemic was over, LCR Investments was more than £200,000 in the red. It was then that Mr. Carl Roberts said he contacted an insolvency company, which told him he'd never be able to repay the debts and flagged his case to the insolvency service. Dave McGrath, Director of Investigation and Enforcement Services at the Insolvency Service, said, while Carl Roberts has stated that the second loan was applied for in error, he has not disputed that this money was retained by the company and disbursed. Carl Roberts also failed to register LCR Investments Limited for VAT, meaning that at least £173,490 was outstanding to HM Revenue and Customs.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
A rather different subject.
Right.
The cathedral applies to reinter kings. Winchester Cathedral has applied for permission to reinter human remains which were previously analysed for a unique project. The remains were removed from the cathedral's mortuary chests in 2012 as part of potentially groundbreaking research into the chest's contents. The boxes contained the bones of Anglo-Saxon kings, including ancestors of King Alfred and the Danes such as Canute. The remains had been jumbled up during the English Civil War by troops loyal to Oliver Cromwell. They ransacked the cathedral, smashing stained glass windows and scattering the bones. Now, Winchester Cathedral hopes to reinter the remains in their rightful places, reuniting the bones of each person as far as possible. A spokesperson for Winchester Cathedral said, "The mortuary chests project is one of the longest and most ambitious research initiatives at the cathedral in modern times and has involved the expertise of many specialist academics, conservators, staff and volunteers. First begun in 2012, the project's findings, which will be published in 2026, will be highly significant to the fields of archaeology, history and genetics, demonstrating the combined power of science, archaeology and historical research to unlock new information about the chests and their occupants. Proposals for the reinterment of the bones recovered from the chests have been submitted to the Cathedral's Fabric Commission for England for review." The application says, "This application presents the cathedral's proposal for the reinterment of human remains previously removed from its 6 mortuary chests for research purposes. The proposal for reinterment is based upon 4 principles. 1. The remains should be arranged in such a way that respects the identities of the deceased as individuals and their relationships to one another. 2. Conservation measures should be proportionate and help the cathedral to manage the natural process of change and biological decay over time. 3. The pathway to potential future research should be maintained and governed by the conditions of a new mortuary chest specific research policy. And 4. The reinterment of the remains should support public intellectual access to the research findings and help to better honour the lives of individuals. Anyone who wants to make representations regarding the application is asked to contact the Cathedral's Fabric Commission by August the 12th.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Reprieve for 2 daycare centres. 2 daycare centres will stay council-run until a new provider has been found, civic chiefs have said. Hampshire County Council had proposed potentially closing Chesil Lodge Daycare Centre in Winchester and Newman Court Resource Centre in Basingstoke if no suitable provider can be found. But now this move has been rejected by officers after a public consultation. The council had been looking at ways to save £97.6 million for its 2025-26 budget, including reviewing 4 service areas: highways, maintenance, post-16 transport, school transport, and older adult daycare. The pre-consultation proposal around the older adult daycare included the potential closure of both daycare provision in Winchester and Basingstoke if the administration failed to find a suitable external provider. However, after a public consultation, which was held from March to May, the council decided to keep them open until a new provider is found. During the Health and Adult Select Committee meeting on July the 16th, councillors wanted assurances about their continued operation. Director of Hampshire Adults Health and Care, Jess Hutchinson, said the County Council would not withdraw from any daycare services until a provider is found. She said, "HCC daycare services would not close until an independent sector provider is found, should that proposal be taken forward, and if we need to delay the date for delivery, we will." Councillor Peter Latham said it was clear from the report that officers had already made investigations about procuring a new provider. He added, "I'm sure they will find an outside provider who is able to provide, at least as a minimum, the existing services which we provide." Councillors praised the council's new proposal and emphasised value of public consultation, which led to a revised proposal. Councillor Kim Taylor said, "As a result of doing the consultation, additional work was done and our original proposition completely changed. And that is an important thing to say because we need to encourage people to respond to our consultations. I think the current proposals are the best proposals we can come up with within the circumstances that we find ourselves in." If approved by the Cabinet on August the 8th, HCC Care and Support will stop operating the older adult daycare services at Chesil Lodge and Newman Court starting in April 2026.
Thank you, Jackie. My headline story is Theatre's Toilet Upgrade Appeal. An arts and education charity has launched an appeal to upgrade outdated toilets at a Winchester theatre. The charity, Play to the Crowd, which runs Theatre Royal Winchester, has started a Give a Crap, Save Our Toilets appeal. The appeal is seeking to raise £100,000 to improve the theatre's downstairs stalls toilets, which have been a source of complaints from theatregoers. The current facilities, installed more than 25 years ago, have been described as lacking in number, cramped and occasionally broken, with a tired appearance. The theatre's management has acknowledged these issues, stating the facilities are no longer suitable for the 80,000 people who visit the venue each year. The downstairs toilets, used by most visitors, stand out against the recently refurbished contemporary theatre bar, foyer, box office and upstairs circle toilets. The charity has launched a crowdfunder to raise £30,000 of the total £100,000 target, with donors able to claim rewards for their contributions. These include a Play to the Crowd tote bag for donations of £25 or more, Play to the Crowd memberships starting from £45, and the chance to name a seat in the theatre's auditorium for donations of £250 or more. The public may have noticed some work has already been carried out. Play to the Crowd has been working with Masker Architects and Appledown Projects to transform the former staff kitchen into inclusive toilets for all, which is phase one of the plan. The new appeal aims to raise money for phase two, which involves refurbishing the downstairs toilets to improve layout, provide more cubicles, and include water-saving and energy-efficient features. Play to the Crowd hopes that phase one will be finished by Monday, July the 28th, allowing audiences and visitors to use the inclusive facilities while phase two is being carried out. The project is expected to be completed by the end of September. The charity was able to start the refurbishments after securing the majority of the £390,000 required for the full project through the restoration levy and grants from trusts and foundations. Individuals and businesses interested in investing can contact Becca Moore at Becca, that is B-E-C-C-A, at playtothecrowd.co.uk. So, we now, as usual, have our death notices.
Arnold. Peggy Anita Arnold. Peacefully at home on the 10th of July, age 90.
Burrows. Anthony John Burrows, known as Tony. Peacefully at Brendan Care, Medway, 27th of June, age 96.
Clark. Margaret Clark. 6th of July, aged 83.
Court, Pearl Court, née Timoth, peacefully 12th July, aged 82.
Guy, David Stewart Guy, peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 30th of June, aged 63.
Hack, James Arthur Hack, known as Jim, at Cirencester Hospital on the 26th of June, aged 89.
Hemsley, Basil Donovan Hemsley, known as Baz, peacefully at Mountbatten, Hampshire on the 2nd of July.
Lynn, Florence Annie Nesbitt Lynn, peacefully 26th of June, aged 96.
Martin, Anne Martin, at home on the 23rd of June, aged 102.
Reader, Brian Hugh Reader, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 30th of June, aged 92.
Wills, Barry Wills, peacefully at Alton Community Hospital on the 4th of July, aged 87.
Thank you. Now we move on to Christian Comment, read by Jackie, please.
And it's by the Reverend Tom Benson. Summer holidays mean exciting travels. Welcome to summer. We really have so much to celebrate at this time of year and give thanks for. However, all of this would have achieved nothing without it being based and rooted in love. I'm reminded again and again that as 1 Corinthians chapter 13 tells us, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. That was true when St. Paul wrote it nearly 2,000 years ago, and it is no less true today. Everyone is inherently valuable, inherently precious, and loved by God, just like us. Across the wider world, it does seem sometimes that the lessons of 1 Corinthians are being forgotten, and it does us all good to hold on to the truth of what St. Paul is saying. Many of us will be travelling far and wide on a summer break over the next few weeks, and so I pray that all your travels and adventures bring you the refreshment and excitement that you need. God bless and have a great summer. And that was by the Reverend Tom Benson from the parish of Brashfield.
Thank you, Jackie. Now we go on to letters to the editor, starting with Deborah, please.
Without doubt, the best editorial headline in my 30-plus years as a Chronicle reader, now is the time for the city to have a Lido in the Chronicle on July the 17th. Hurrah! Thank you. Unfortunately, though, Winchester City Council's eventual acknowledgement that so many people, over 3,000, signatures on a petition in 2021 would like to have a Lido still doesn't mean they understand that what's required is not just a new development partner to replace the University of Southampton. As the editorial says, the council likes to do big things and they don't work. A Lido on such a sensitive type site must be low-key and low-impact, not corporate or blingy. It mustn't be exclusive, like the admittedly splendid new ones at Reading and Bristol, which are private members' clubs. Better models are the numerous small-scale community-based ones, many in much smaller towns. By chance, 2 days after the wonderful editorial, The Guardian published an obituary of planner and economist David Boyle, who was deeply involved with the Liberal Democrats at national level. Some of our current councillors may even remember the weekly Liberal Democrat News he edited for 6 years. He believed that whenever something is wrong, it's probably too big. As well as the Lib Dems, Boyle worked with the New Economics Foundation, which, as The Guardian says, aims to transform the economy so that it works for people and the planet. That's what Winchester needs. and in these days of undeniable climate change, it should include a Lido. And that was from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Thomas Gravatt writes to us about water mess. Southern Water have increased water bills by an average of 47%, with some residents seeing their bills almost quadruple overnight. They now charge more than any other UK provider. So the question is, what are we getting for our money? Southern Water's record is atrocious. From water outages to toxic sewage dumping, we are getting a dreadful service. They're dumping millions of litres of sewage into Hampshire's precious chalk streams like the Test and the Itchen each year, and they keep rewarding this failure by giving their executives huge bonuses. Their chief executive has just had his pay doubled to £1.4 million. It's unacceptable that a company that is providing an essential service can raise prices this extensively only to pump the extra cash into executive pay, particularly when their environmental record is so poor. When water companies were privatised in 1989, the theory was that the private sector would make the service more efficient by introducing competition. In reality, there is no competition with companies bidding for areas of the country to cover and then operating a local monopoly. They haven't invested in infrastructure for decades. Instead, they raise bills, make huge profits, and then channel the money to their shareholders. Privatisation hasn't worked, and it's time for the state to take over more direct control of water companies, whether that is by making them public interest companies or by full nationalisation, I don't really mind. The key is access to clean water is a human right, and for the good of local people and nature, we must take back control of it from reckless private interests. And that's from Thomas Gravatt, Copperfield Road, Swadling, Southampton.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
I have another letter about the Lido from a P.V. Smith. Like many, I would very much welcome a Lido in Winchester, not least because I never got to enjoy the one at Worthy Lane, being too young by a year or three. But the cost of construction would probably be too prohibitive for something that would not be a huge money spinner. Yet, the building of the thing should not be exorbitant. After all, it is but a very large hole in the ground. An engineer could clarify whether it needed to be tanked, being so low-lying next to the River Itchen. Having said that, with the right management in a city the size of Winchester, it, should one be built, be more than capable of looking after itself financially. I agree with your comment that the City Council has loftier ambitions for the site. It will be interesting to see what transpires. The Southampton University plan stretched the legal covenant from 100 plus years ago to breaking point. I'm sure all the lawyers living in Hyde will be taking a close interest too. And that's from P.V. Smith of Romsey Road in Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. My letter is written by Nick Adams King, who is the leader of Hampshire County Council. And it's headed Hampshire Day. This week, we marked Hampshire Day, a moment to celebrate the rich heritage, vibrant communities and enduring spirit of our county. Held annually on the 15th of July, Hampshire Day coincides with St Swithin's Day, honouring the patron saint of Winchester Cathedral, and offering a chance to reflect on the past while looking ahead to the future. Across Hampshire, flags were raised, stories shared, and communities came together to recognise what makes our county so special. From the rolling hills of the South Downs to the bustling ports of Southampton and Portsmouth, Hampshire's diversity is its strength. It's a county steeped in history, home to literary giants like Jane Austen and Charles Dickens, and one that continues to evolve through innovation, resilience and community spirit. As leader of Hampshire County Council, I've had the privilege of witnessing firsthand the energy and dedication of our residents. whether it's volunteers supporting local charities, parish councils organising community events, or families simply enjoying the beauty of our countryside, Hampshire Day reminds us of the values we hold dear. Pride in place, commitment to one another, and a shared vision for a better tomorrow. This year's celebrations also come at a pivotal time for local government in our region. The government has asked councils across Hampshire and the Solent to consider proposals for reorganisation, moving from the current two-tier system to a streamlined model of unitary authorities. It is a significant moment and one that invites both opportunity and challenge. Hampshire County Council has put forward a proposal for four unitary authorities designed to balance financial resilience, service quality and local identity. The suggested configuration includes a North and Mid Hampshire authority covering areas like Winchester, Basingstoke and Deane, and East Hampshire, a South West authority including Southampton, Tess Valley and the New Forest, a South East authority encompassing Portsmouth, Fareham, Gosport and Havant, and the Isle of Wight as a standalone unitary. This model is grounded in rigorous analysis and aims to protect vital services, particularly for our most vulnerable residents, while delivering long-term savings and stability. But it's important to acknowledge that this is not the only vision. Other councils have expressed concerns about scale, identity and democratic accountability. Some fear that larger authorities may feel remote or disconnected from the communities they serve. And here's where I want to be clear. There is no single right answer. Each proposal has merit. Each reflects a different emphasis, whether on place, efficiency, or local voice. What matters most is that we approach this process with openness, respect, and a shared commitment to doing what's best for our residents. I've said before, and I'll say it again, this is not about winning an argument. It's about shaping a future that works. That means listening to feedback, engaging with communities, and ensuring that any new structure is built on solid foundations, financially, operationally, and democratically. After all, it is the government who decide the outcome, not us. As we continue this journey, I encourage everyone to take part in the public engagement programme running through July and August. Your views matter. Whether you're passionate about preserving local identity or focused on improving service delivery, this is your chance to help shape the future of Hampshire. Hampshire Day reminds us of who we are. The reorganisation conversation asks us who we want to be. Let's honour our past while embracing the possibilities ahead with humility, ambition, and a deep respect for the communities that we serve. That is written by Nick Adams King, who is the leader of Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester. Deborah, please.
And this is a very short letter from Ingrid Bond saying, "Thank you to the hospital porter who kindly took me to the A&E department following the injury to my arm from closing a lift door." And that was Ingrid Bond, New Road, Littleton.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Simon Lever writes about our Ukrainian friends. "It's truly wonderful news that Winchester is a twin with a city in Ukraine. A number of Ukrainians live in Winchester and are warmly welcomed. Myself and fellow Kings and Scribes, the exhibition stewards at Winchester, enthusiastically welcome these delightful people. One year during the St. Cross Fair, a group of Ukrainians delighted everyone with their traditional dancing. Most wonderful. Although absent from the St. Cross event this year, hopefully they will return next year, should it be possible. I'm delighted that Winchester has a strong, special relationship with our Ukrainian friends. Simon Lieber, Juniper Close, Badger Farm."
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
And this letter from Monica Gill is headed "Vocal Objections." "Two articles in the Chronicle caught my attention this week, River Park and The Corner House on July the 17th. I was attending the Cabinet meeting when River Park was on the agenda, a meeting which was interrupted because a huge number of protesters arrived, some of whom managed to get into the meeting room, the remainder outside, but all voicing vocally their objections to the sell-off to Southampton University. There were also councillors speaking out against the proposal. Did the council listen? Of course not. Probably all done and dusted before it reached the meeting, and probably why a QC was there, who the leader referred to when objections were made to support their decision. Eventually, it went to a vote of attending cabinet members. As I recall, just 7 who voted, as we know, in favour. Pity the council didn't listen, because here they are, trying to flog it off again and setting aside over £100,000 to help with costs. Once again, ratepayers' money being wasted. The second article was the corner house, which I understand is going for auction and possibly sold at a loss. When it was originally purchased, it was no doubt financed from the housing revenue account, therefore using tenants' money. Money that could have been used, amongst other things, upgrading council properties. It would appear that the decision to obtain this property was not fully investigated as to whether it was suitable for conversion into flats. What I find appalling, according to Hampshire Chronicle report, is the councillor blaming Liz Truss. I knew they'd get a dig in about the Conservatives. But what is worse, they're placing some blame on the war in Ukraine. How low can this administration get, blaming a country who are going through hell for their mismanagement? They should hang their heads in shame. And that's from Monica Gill, Lawn Street in Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. My letter is actually also about the corner house. It's written by Tony Gaster. It is headed, "We Expect More from Councillors." Should we expect the City Council to handle property in a professional way? The old River Park Leisure Centre, a huge facility and area, has been idle for years. Chronicle, July 17th. That, I understand, is owned by the people of this city. Now we have a small example of a pub in Parchment Street owned by the council. Is nobody accountable anymore, or should we expect more? Better still, should city councils be personally responsible for wasted assets? That's written by Tony Gaster of Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester, and it's accompanied by a photograph of the corner house, which is at last being renovated so that it can be sold. But it has deteriorated considerably over the last few years. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is from Mark Rowe. I attended the match Winchester City FC versus Queen's Park Rangers on Saturday. It truly was a fantastic match. Watched by 852 fans, all mixing together, I saw the true spirit of the beautiful game and as a football family. Winchester City drew 2-2 with QPR, and the match showed how there's a lot of hope for the future with Winchester City's squad of players. Winchester City is truly a committed club that welcomes everyone. Feel free to come to a game. Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Mike Sherwood is grappling with a white cap. At a recent family gathering, my three cousins asked me, as an old Simonian, 1959 to 64, whether I knew anything about a white cap, which is apparently awarded to elite sportsmen at the grammar school. Their father, Ray Downs, my uncle, who was at Peter's just before the Second World War, apparently won it. I know he was a very fine and brave goalkeeper. My brother Alan, who is an excellent all-rounder, and I played football for the school, although he with rather more distinction than myself. If any of your old Simonian readers, even older than myself, can provide any more information on the white cap, I'd be very grateful. The postcode is SO213HD. And that's from Mike Sherwood of Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Thank you, Richard. Well, if you have an opinion or subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836, or you can email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we go on to editorial comment, read by Richard, please.
Timely reuniting of the royal remains. Winchester is full of amazing stories, and few can rival that of the royal bones in the mortuary chests in the cathedral. Major kings such as Canute were interred in the 6 wooden chests, a reflection of the importance of this city 1,000 years ago. Then came the English Civil War, and the parliamentary troops went on the rampage, scattering the bones. For nearly 400 years they lay jumbled up. In 2012, the cathedral got permission for the removal of the bones from the chests and for research to be conducted on those remains, shedding light through DNA analysis. The results of these investigations involving academics from across Europe is due to be published in 2026. It will be fascinating. As the cathedral told us, the mortuary chest project is one of the longest and most ambitious research initiatives at the cathedral in modern times, and has involved the expertise of many specialist academics, conservators, staff and volunteers. First begun in 2012, the project's findings, which will be published in 2026, will be highly significant to the fields of archaeology, history and genetics, demonstrating the combined power of science, archaeology and historical research to unlock new information about the chests and their occupants. In the meantime, the cathedral has applied for permission to reinter the bones, which will now be put back in a proper order, or reassociated, as the cathedral put it. So Canute and other monarchs will once again be able to fully rest in peace. 2 new mortuary chests are to be created because of the number of people now known to have been in the chests. A public notice has been placed in Cathedral Close outlining the cathedral's plans, with a deadline for public comments of August the 12th. Let us hope the cathedral plans a suitable ceremony to mark what is a momentous occasion.
Thank you, Richard. Perhaps I ought to explain my giggle at the start of that. Every so often I introduce an item and look at somebody and they look scared and scrabble around for bits of paper because they realise they're next. Anyway, I'm looking scared and scrabbling around for this bit of paper, which is the opinion piece written this week by George Hayter. It's headed Happiness and Other People. I've been toying with the old age question of what makes people happy. My theory is that human happiness is too often about comparison with other people. I think many of us are happier if we believe that our lives compare favourably with others. Well, this may sound brutal, but I think we tend to be content if we think that most other people are less fortunate than we are. And we are discontented if we think other people are more fortunate. I think a lot of us get depressed if we feel that almost everyone else is more fortunate than we are. The bitter feeling of being hard done by is a harmful state of mind that makes happiness inaccessible, even impossible. What started me analysing happiness in this way was a news item. Years ago, researchers had found that people who had friends mostly richer than themselves tended to be less happy than people whose friends were mostly poorer. That led me to question whether the same phenomenon might apply to enviable traits other than wealth. In making our powerful comparisons between our lives and the lives of other people, we use 3 criteria, I concluded. The 3 categories I discern are 1, how much money we have, 2, how much love we attract, and 3, our status, or how much admiration we receive. Recent behaviour of 2 of Britain's most famous brothers suggests to me that comparisons can be a powerful happiness decider. Prince Andrew and Prince Harry both have an older brother, richer and with a great deal more status. Recent royal news suggests that both these unfortunate younger princes are less happy than their more fortunate older brother. Surely the centuries-old phrase, "we are all in the same boat," shows that people have always taken comfort through comparing themselves to others and finding that many others share their misfortune. The commonly expressed sentiment, "aren't we lucky," demonstrates the opposite, joyfully exclaimed by people unexpectedly finding that they are more fortunate than others. Have you ever been content in a restaurant, having a nice time, joking with others on your table and feeling perfectly happy, until greater laughter from a neighbouring table makes you less happy? As a small example of the comparison happiness effect. The effect can be greater watching a comedy play. When the rest of the audience is roaring with laughter and I don't find the play funny, a theatre outing makes me sad. My happiness has long been limited by a feeling of failure. I compare myself to my father, who became a respected civic leader and achieved greater wealth than I have. In search for further evidence to support my happiness comparison theory, I googled happiness link to comparison with others and found scores of web pages expounding the same idea and urging people to stop comparing themselves to others. So I'm not the first person to link happiness to comparison with others. Well, perhaps the link is obvious. Comparison is the thief of joy, an Instagram page warns. I agree. Conversely, not comparing with others is the route to happiness. The theory isn't new. I learned it from the web. Philosopher John Stuart Mill wrote in the 19th century, "Men do not desire to be rich, but richer than other men." I concede that comparing is not the only thing affecting happiness. Some people are plainly born happy. Others are infected with happiness by a cheerful upbringing or by jovial people around them. Recently, I've been trying to stop comparing myself to anyone else. If I compare at all these days, it's mostly to my younger self, on my own path through life. If you can't stop comparing, at least include comparing yourself to those worse off than you, such as the poor, the oppressed, and the downtrodden, which includes most Hampshire people, unfortunately enough, to have lived before modern times. Right, we now have a couple of pieces by Belgarum, which is an alternative look at the news. Deborah, the first piece, please.
Yes, the first one's called Award for Mum of Five. A mum of five who returned to education after escaping an abusive relationship has won a national award. Liana Wilson, 39, from the University of Winchester, was recognised in the academic success category at the UpReach 2025 Student Social Mobility Awards. The award celebrates students who've overcome significant barriers in their educational journeys. Liana said she endured an abusive relationship which saw her violently assaulted, leading to a prolonged legal battle to protect herself and her children. Speaking after the award ceremony, held at London's Mansion House, Liana said, "I was holding back tears. I genuinely didn't think they'd say my name." Her experience with the criminal justice system sparked a passion for research and learning, which eventually led her back into education, first at the college level and then at the university level. At Winchester, she has excelled academically and was named Outstanding Student Academic Representative for the Faculty of Law, Crime and Justice at this year's Student Union Recognition Awards. She also served on the Commuting Students Network Committee, which was named Network of the Year. Liana and her fellow recipients were described as having truly outstanding profile, characterised by consistent academic excellence, impactful leadership and commitment.
Thank you, Deb. The second piece from Jackie, please.
And it's called A New Bridge Over the River. And I should explain there's a photo with it of the river at the Weirs in Winchester, with a shrub growing from one of the banks, reaching over to the other side, almost bridge-like. It was the Roman engineer who converted Winchester from a shrubby bog into a place with dry land and a river. Before the legions conquered this island, the whole river looked more like Winnell Moors, lots of little streams joining up and breaking away with countless trees and bushes. This photo shows a bush, seemingly trying to recreate Roman times on the weirs. It is more than halfway across the river, and it is only a matter of time before someone tries to leap the gap. Belgarum doesn't know who is liable for the control of vegetation along the river, perhaps the city council, or maybe the owner of the riverbank. But it is a serious issue, because the shade makes it harder for vegetation to grow, and a lack of flora deters various fauna. The problem is getting noticeable just south of the M3 at Hockley, with swathes of the riverbank now shaded.
Thank you, Jackie. Well, finally, before we go on to items of general news, there's a lot to tell you about what is happening in our area that you might find of interest. Firstly, Saturday the 26th, you might get your recording by this time, Bracefield Village Hall Market, that starts at 10:30, and then there's a Georgian style and society guided walking tour of Winchester. Thursday the 31st of July, Wickham Festival starts. On Friday the 1st of August, the Southampton Club Classics Orchestra are playing at the Silver Lake Stadium, Stone Lane, Eastleigh. On the 2nd of August, at the same venue, there is the Ultimate Outdoor Country Music Festival. What have we got next? Oh, the Kingsworthy Summer Fete. That is also on Saturday, the 2nd of August. Sunday the 3rd of August, Medieval Jewish Winchester Guided Walking Tour. Saturday the 9th of August, Crime and Punishment in Winchester, a guided walking tour of the Winchester's past, considering misdeeds, misdemeanours, police and prisons. The last one I'm going to tell you about, Saturday the 16th of August, Hidden Waterways of Winchester, a guided walking tour. Well, before the general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 5:20 a.m. and set again at around 9 p.m. So we go on to the items of general news. Deborah, first article, please.
Yes, this is an article about our MP, Danny Chambers, written by Sebastian Hoare. Sitting in a cafe on a sweltering July morning, Dr. Danny Chambers explains he doesn't usually drink full-fat Coke, but has made an exception today. "I've had a long week," he says. "Breakfast meetings, that kind of stuff, and then late nights. I need a caffeine boost." Having had just one day off since Christmas, his description of a parliamentarian's life is pretty relentless, if that seems fair. We're discussing a busy first year in office for the Winchester MP, which saw the passing of the private member's bill he introduced to the House of Commons on July the 4th, the exact day he was elected last year. The legislation aims to crack down on puppy smuggling and pet mutilation. Fitting, considering the Lib Dem MP's background as a vet. "I'm really pleased," he said of the bill. "Most MPs could have a 20-year career and never actually change the law, and I've done it within a year." On top of this, Dr. Chambers says he has helped more than 8,000 people in the constituency with issues as diverse as healthcare, special needs education, housing, and visa issues. He doesn't miss the opportunity to point out that former Conservative MP Flick Drummond frequently stressed she had helped 7,000 during her entire 5-year spell in office during her campaign to become the MP for Winchester last year. When it comes to the Tories in general, he doesn't hold back. I think they're continuing to be inward.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Hosepipe ban in force. A hosepipe ban is now in force across the Winchester district. Last week, Southern Water announced a temporary use ban, or TUB, would come into effect from 9 a.m. on Monday, July the 21st, in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The ban restricts what residents can do with water, and if they ignore it, they risk a £1,000 fine. A hosepipe ban stops residents using a hosepipe for non-essential activities, including watering gardens and plants, filling paddling pools, domestic ponds, ornamental fountain, hot tubs or swimming pools, washing cars, patios or windows. How long will the hosepipe ban last? Southern Water say they will remove the hosepipe ban as soon as they can. This will only happen when there's enough water in reservoirs, rivers and underground aquifers to meet demand. Residents are encouraged to gently remind neighbours, family members and friends of the restrictions in place. Only if they feel comfortable. If Southern Water hear about someone breaking the rules, they will remind them of the restrictions first, before considering any further action.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Residents left puzzled over pothole repairs. Residents on a Winchester street have voiced their bemusement after Hampshire County Council removed their parked cars to carry out pothole repairs, only to leave hours later without having done anything. The works were scheduled for Easter Day on Edgar Road, where residents from St Cross Road also park. Like many residents of St Cross Road, Cathy Heathcote and Deborah Gretch park on Edgar Road. They claim that neither they nor any of their fellow residents were notified that they had to move their cars. They also told the Chronicle that the uneven road surface on Edgar Road has been a long-standing issue, with residents frequently complaining to the council. We see the other oldies walking down the centre of the road because it's more of an even surface towards the middle, said Cathy. The uneven road surface also has an impact on cars, with Deborah's suspension coil once even snapping as she was driving on Edgar Road. She said, "When I drive into that road, I literally try to drive around the potholes. My car is actually quite low, and this great big coil just completely snapped." When it came to the day of the works, which actually took place on Tuesday, April the 22nd, residents were surprised to find their cars had been moved off the road using heavy machinery. Deborah said, "The annoying thing is, when they came, they were cheeky enough to move all our cars without asking, and then they didn't fix the road, and then they did the rest of the road down there. A couple of roads had been done, but not ours. The workers were stood around for ages, and I'd come and I said, 'What's going on?' And they said, 'Well, you know, you should have all moved your cars.' But nobody got a notice to say they should have. 2 hours later, I came out and they're all still sitting there, and he said, 'Well, we might not be doing it.'" Deborah says the workers eventually left after 8 hours without having carried out any repairs on the part of Edgar Road near her house. She described this as totally bizarre. "They ought to be aware," she added, "because the parking is such a big ordeal around here and there's no way anybody on this road parks at the front on St Cross Road." When asked about the situation, a Hampshire County Council spokesperson said, "The work carried out on Edgar Road, Winchester, between Ranley Road and St James Lane was a surface dressing treatment designed to improve the durability of the road surface. A letter was sent to residents 2 weeks prior to the start of the works, followed by a hand-delivered notice 24 hours before the treatment began to properties fronting the impacted section of the road. Signs giving advance notice of the work were also displayed."
Thank you, Jackie. My piece is headed "Council Approves Blackmail Proposal." Winchester City Council has approved a proposal described by one councillor as blackmail to tear down a barn and build a new three-bedroom house in its place. The plans, submitted by Dr. Bill Cuthbert, are for a site at Albury Park Barns, Alsford, which has been used in the past as a stable for horses. Former Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon Smith, who represents Alsford, said he would give the plan the green light in spite of his reservations about potential future development. "There's a sort of blackmail, isn't there?" he said. "If you don't accept this, you'll get this. You do wonder what might be coming down the line. But as I said, I think we do have to accept the proposal in its present form, so I will be accepting it." This was in reference to the comments of Richard Osborne, who defended the proposal at a planning committee meeting on Wednesday, July the 16th. Mr. Osborne said, "Even if the planning permission is refused today, the conversion of the barn can still go ahead." He added, however, that this would be disadvantageous both to the council and the owners, as the resulting construction would be worse. Another objection to the new house came from neighbour Ian Tillett, who feared the people in the new house would be able to see into his garden, affecting him and his partner's privacy. Committee members, however, commented that the balcony of the house would not actually look over the garden. Concerns raised by Councillor Gordon Smith were linked to the implementation of the local plan for New Alsford, which outlines a vision for the town's development until 2033. The Planning Committee unanimously approved the proposal. Deborah, please.
Austin's childhood home is a work of art. A long-lost piece of literary history has been brought to life through art. The first known painting of the Steventon Rectory, the childhood home of Jane Austen, has been created by Hampshire artist Joe South. The artist spent considerable time researching and exploring the area to produce a painting of Steventon's Rectory. The rectory, where Austen wrote some of her earliest works, was demolished in the 19th century, and no confirmed visual records have existed until now. Joe South said, "A few much earlier drawings believed to depict the rectory do exist, but their authenticity is uncertain and they often contradict one another. I wanted to depict the rectory using facts from the rectory project and what we know of the building's history and the Austin's life there at the time. I combined this information together with my own photos of the landscape and local architecture to design the final painting. If you're expecting a typical Georgian-style rectory, you might be surprised by the outcome. It was a fascinating project, and I learnt so much from talking with Deborah. I hope people enjoy seeing my interpretation of the rectory, based on the discoveries that have remained hidden underground for over 200 years. The painting is based on findings from the 2011 Archaeological Rectory Project, detailed in Deborah Charlton's book, Archaeology Greets Jane Austen."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Comedian's good pie-brations. Comedian Bill Bailey has been pictured enjoying a pie and mash in Winchester as he begins his walk through Hampshire to raise money for a charity fighting cancer. The 2020 Strictly Come Dancing winner tucked into a pie at Pie Caramba in Parchment Street, holding onto a massive gravy boat as he posed for the camera. The comedian sat down for the meal before beginning his charity walk yesterday, where he's walking the entire South Downs Way for Macmillan Cancer Support. It commemorates 20 years since he lost his mother to cancer. His route will see him travel 100 miles from Winchester to Eastbourne, passing by Corhampton near Bishop's Waltham and Horne Dean in the process. Bill has already raised £7,600 for Macmillan within the first day of the walk starting.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Best and worst regarded GP surgeries in Winchester. The best and worst regarded GP surgeries in Winchester have been revealed in the results of an annual survey. Patients have given their opinion on their surgery as part of the GP Patient Survey 2025. Nationally, 702,837 were completed, a 25.8% response rate. According to the data, of the 11 GP surgeries across the Winchester district, Twyford surgery on Hazley Road, Twyford, took the top spot, with a 95% ranking in the overall positive experience category. St Clement's partnership on Tanner Street, Winchester, had the lowest overall score of the 11, with 78%. It moved this year to a new facility on the corner of Upper Brook Street and Friars Gate. Here is the list of all 11 surgeries in the Greater Winchester area ranked by overall positive experience. Twyford Surgery, Hazley Road, Twyford, 95%. Wickham Surgery, Houghton Way, Wickham, 93%. Whitchurch Surgery, Bell Street, Whitchurch, 93%. Stockbridge Surgery, New Street, Stockbridge, 91%. Alsford Surgery, Station Road, Alsford, 90%. Friarsgate Practice, Stockbridge Road, Week, 89%. Grattan Surgery, Grattan Close, Sutton Scotney, 89%. St Paul's Surgery, Allison Way, Winchester, 88%. Boundaries Surgery, Winchester Road, Alton, 87%. The Watercress Medical Group, Lymington, Bottom Road, Medstead, 83%. St Clement's Partnership, Tanner Street, Winchester, 78%. Keely Ellis, Deputy Director of Primary Care at NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "We welcome the findings of this snapshot survey, which helps us to understand our patients' experience of using or interacting with our services. We are pleased to see so many of our patients have had a positive experience, and this is something we want to ensure we continue providing and build upon. We always welcome feedback and will continue to monitor our patient experience. We also want to say thank you to the practice teams who work tirelessly to support patients where we know sometimes demand can be high."
Thank you, Jackie. My headline piece is Padel Forces Plan Change. Padel Courts, is that the correct pronunciation? We don't know. Padel Courts at the centre of the noise rail in Winchester have forced a change in the planning application for a new block of flats. The 32 new apartments will be built by Archill Homes at Berwick Court next to Winchester Rackets and Fitness Club, which recently installed three new Padel Courts. After neighbours vowed to take the club to the Supreme Court over the gunshot-like sounds of Padel, similar to tennis but louder, it decided to appeal against the plans on the grounds that future residents of the flats would complain. Now, at a Winchester City Council Planning Committee on July the 16th, councillors voted in favour of the amendments, which include the removal of balconies facing the courts and the installation of extra thick windows. The club has also raised the barrier by the Padel Courts using denser timber for enhanced acoustic screening. Addressing the committee, Councillor Johnny Morris said, "If you approve this, you need to be absolutely certain that the residents of these houses will not find the Padel Court a nuisance. The revised plans will mean there will have to be a ventilation strategy, as the proposal is that residents should keep their windows closed if they want to avoid the noise nuisance from the club." Deborah, please.
Cathedral's highest honour for Lord Lieutenant. The Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire has received a cathedral's highest honour. Nigel Atkinson was installed as a Companion of St Swithin at Winchester Cathedral for his exceptional and outstanding service to the cathedral. The honour was given during a special St Swithin's Day Evensong service. Canon Charles Stewart, a distinguished musician and former precentor at the cathedral, has also recently become a Companion of St Swithin. The new companions join Lady Mary Fagan, the former Lord Lieutenant and Lady of the Garter, and Bruce Parker, the broadcaster and recently retired chairman of the Cathedral Friends, as members of the Distinguished Order. Only five people have been honoured by Winchester Cathedral in this way. The award is the highest honour the cathedral can bestow, and by statute is given for their unwavering and exemplary service to cathedral. And it is accompanied by a photo of the four of them, all very proudly showing off their badges.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Plans to replace female tiger at Marwell. A beloved Hampshire Zoo is set to replace a female tiger that died during a planned mating session with a male tiger. That was quite a session. The pair were due to meet for the first time at Marwell Zoo on Tuesday, July the 1st. But the incident ended in disaster when 8-year-old Amur tiger, Amur? A-M-U-R, Valentina, sustained fatal injuries. Staff monitoring the tigers, which can be found in eastern Russia, northeast China and North Korea, acted swiftly to draw the male away, but sadly nothing could be done to save Valentina. A spokesperson for the zoo said, "She'll be deeply missed by her keepers, who formed a strong bond with her, our veterinary team, wider Marwell teams and our guests. But hope is not lost to find 5-year-old male tiger Pasha a mate for life, as the zoo has confirmed its plans to bring him a new potential partner. Pasha arrived at Marwell Zoo in February from Port Lipney Safari Park, and late Valentina had been with Marwell for 5 years, having arrived from Hodonin Zoo in Croatia. Animal operations manager Ian Godwin said the pair had interacted with each other through the fence between their habitats on a number of occasions before their fatal mating session. Ian added the interactions were brilliant between the two animals. It went very, very well initially, and then, unfortunately, something triggered in the wild instinct of an animal, and that's what happens. We need to focus now on bringing another female in ready for when we start breeding again in the future. A number of European zoos are part of a programme with only an estimated 500 Amur tigers left in the wild.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Former Royal Navy nurse appointed as new CEO. A former Royal Navy nurse has been announced as the new chief executive of Hampshire Hospitals. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, which runs Basingstoke, Andover and Winchester Hospitals, has announced it has appointed Sue Harriman as the new chief executive. Ms. Harriman will succeed Alex Whitfield, who will be stepping down at the end of October. She has a track record of leadership in healthcare, with more than 15 years of clinical experience as a nurse in the Royal Navy. She joined the NHS in 2002 as a nurse consultant in infection prevention. Since then, she has held a number of senior executive roles within the NHS in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, including Director of Nursing and Allied Health Professions, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director. She was Chief Executive of Solent NHS Trust for 7 years, which at the time provided community and mental health services, before joining Bath and North East Somerset, Swindon and Wiltshire Integrated Care Board as Chief Executive. Ms. Harriman has also contributed at a national level, serving as Chief Operating Officer for the COVID-19 Vaccination Deployment Programme. Martin Earwicker, Chair of HHFT, described Ms. Harriman as a visionary and compassionate leader who is committed to creating inclusive, supportive environments where staff can thrive and be at their best and patients receive the highest standards of care.
Thank you, Jackie. SEN School plans unveiled for Empty the Hive building. Excuse me. Plans have been submitted to transform an unused building near Winchester into a facility for young children with special educational needs, SEN. Hampshire County Council aims to repurpose the Hive, an empty building on Shepherd's Lane, Compton, to provide 24 SEN places for early years at Shepherdstown Special School. The Hive has been vacant since Eastleigh College left the site. Under the new proposal, it will be remodelled and renovated to include three classrooms, a therapy room, a sensory room, a small group room, and staff offices. An outdoor teaching and play area for pupils is also in the plan. The refurbishment of the Hive is part of a larger proposal that involves the demolition of College House, subject to a separate application. This space will be used to expand the parking area. The council hopes the increased parking area will help alleviate parking issues along Shepherd's Lane, with plans for a new entrance. The council conducted a pre-planning consultation to gather residents' opinions. Seven comments were received, highlighting concerns about potential disruption and increased noise from the demolition. In response, the councillor stated that once a contractor is appointed, they will be required to provide a construction site method statement detailing plans for managing the site, including access, parking, noise and dust control. Deborah, please.
Four men are jailed for a total of 18 years for burglary spree. Four men who were part of a conspiracy to commit burglary across Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire and Sussex have been jailed. Appearing at Southampton Crown Court on Friday, July the 18th, it was heard that the group would travel in stolen vans or utilise stolen number plates to drive to various locations to commit burglary. The large-scale conspiracy, which mostly targeted stores selling electric bicycles, took place over a three-month period between July and September 2023 across Winchester, Basingstoke, Hook, Lee-on-the-Solent, Southampton, Warminster, Shaftesbury and Crawley. As part of the investigation, a total of 11 burglaries were uncovered. The total value of goods stolen was more than £215,000. Further inquiries by investigators also recovered a number of stolen vehicles and number plates, which were used as part of the conspiracy. Four men pleaded guilty to conspiring to burgle at various hearings in Southampton Crown Court between May 2024 and November 2024. They are Rhys Thornton, 30, of Pansy Road in Southampton, who's been jailed for 3 years, 4 months. Richard Adrian Chilton, 34, of Judges Gatley Close in Bishopstoke, who's been jailed for 5 years, 3 months. Andrew Joseph Wolfe, 32, of Wicks Place in Chelmsford, who's been jailed for 4 years, plus 2 years for a separate unlawful wounding offence. Martin William Meadows, 33, of Portswood Road in Southampton, has been jailed for 4 years, 2 months. Detective Constable Cheryl Tether, who led the investigation, said these men brought misery to not only the businesses they targeted, but the local residents whose vehicles were stolen to enable them to commit these crimes.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Renowned sculptor and painter dies at 86. A renowned sculptor has died at the age of 86. Rachel Fenner, who lived near Winchester, was an environmental artist and sculptor known for her public artworks, including the Hampshire Jubilee sculpture outside Winchester Crown Court. She died on Saturday, July the 12th, and leaves behind two sons, Beavis and Nick. Her career spanned more than five decades and included sculpture, painting and large-scale public commissions. Rachel trained in sculpture and painting at Wimbledon School of Art before completing 4 years of postgraduate study at the Royal College of Art Sculpture School. She went on to teach at Wimbledon, West Surrey College of Art in Farnham and Winchester School of Art. In 1979, she was awarded an Arts Council Fellowship to work with Portsmouth City Council, where she developed a pilot scheme exploring the concept of art as environment. This led to a series of public art projects that integrated art directly into the fabric of public spaces. Her works included earthworks, bronze casts, mosaics, brickwork, gates, seating and trellises. Many of these pieces served as markers for archaeological sites within urban environments, one of her most recognisable works is the Hampshire Jubilee sculpture, completed in November 2003 and installed on the Law Courts Terrace in Winchester. Commissioned by Hampshire County Council, the sculpture commemorates the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. Other notable projects include the Link Stone Fountain in Malvern and the Silo Square scheme in Ystradmynock, South Wales. Beyond public art, Rachel also produced domestic scale sculptures in wood, stone and bronze. Her smaller works were highly abstracted but often inspired by nature, water and ancient British sites. She was also a respected painter with works following the British tradition of romantic and abstract landscapes. Her paintings drew heavily on the coastal scenery of Pembrokeshire and Dorset, as well as the history of ancient Britain. Critic John Russell Taylor of The Times wrote, "Rachel Fenner makes paintings which make one wonder if she's just this instant invented abstraction, all by herself. Like much abstraction, hers seems to be landscape-based. That's to say, one can suspect that one is seeing a transmogrified cornfield, branches against the moon, cracks in the ice and such, without ever being able to pin down these associations unequivocally." Born in Scarborough, Yorkshire, Rachel received a Sainsbury Award grant in 1966.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie.
Danish homeware and lifestyle store set for city. The countdown has begun for the opening of a new shop in Winchester city centre. Sostren Green, a Danish homeware and lifestyle store, will be opening on Friday, August the 8th in 7 to 8 High Street. The site, which has been empty for 2 years, was previously owned by Kloss & Hamblin, C&H, which has since moved to a location further up the High Street. This will be Sostren Green's second location in Hampshire, after opening their doors in Basingstoke in 2024. The retail chain, founded by Inge Green and Knud Kresten Vopel Oslin, first opened its doors in 1973 in Aarhus, Denmark. It is now run by the couple's two sons, Mikael and Kresten Green, and has grown to have more than 300 stores across Europe. They currently have 47 stores in the UK, a number which the brothers hope to double by 2027. Sostren Green offers a diverse array of stylish products inspired by their Scandinavian roots. From home decor, kitchenware, craft supplies and stationery, all organised in an exciting maze full of products in every corner. In a similar style to IKEA, but on a smaller scale. Sostren Green prides itself on selling high-quality products at affordable prices, selling shelves for £18.80 and vases for £6.44. An extensive food and drink collection is also featured, including cake mixes and chocolate bars, as well as a selection of loose-leaf teas that are marketed from £1.79. The products are made entirely or partially from recycled materials to reflect the company's role to reduce their carbon footprint and having minimal impact on climate change. This means the company has phased out their range of single-use plastic products and replaced them with recyclable alternatives. Join them for their grand opening on Friday, August the 8th at 9:59 a.m.
Thank you, Jackie. My headline piece is "Dream to Set Sail Once Again is Fulfilled." A care home resident's dream to sail again has been fulfilled. Maypole Booper Care Home in Southampton arranged for a 73-year-old resident, David Poulton, to enjoy his lifelong passion for sailing. With the help of the Royal Yachting Association, David was taken out on the water in a sailing dinghy. The Royal Yachting Association's Sailability Programme takes people with disabilities or those who face barriers to sailing out on the water with an experienced instructor. Throughout his life, David was an enthusiastic sailor and has memories of sailing with his father. He grew up in West End, Southampton, and started sailing at 14 years old in Bitton. Activity coordinator at Maypole, Karen Singleton, said David regularly shares memories of his time sailing, so we thought it would be really special to organise this trip out for him. We were so pleased he had an amazing time with the instructor and that he's still recalling the fun he had at sea. The Sailability team were fantastic and we can't thank them enough. David said, it was a perfect day. I was so pleased to experience sailing again. Being out on the water feels like home to me. The trip was organised as part of Bupa's Never Too Late initiative that supports residents to experience new things, continue with their hobbies and rediscover former interests. Maypole Bupa Care Home is in Hedge End, Southampton and welcomes residents in need of nursing or residential care, including those living with Parkinson's. Deborah, please.
I have another article about Southern Water here, written by Ross Marshall. The Southern Water's chief executive has been urged to refuse a pay rise of hundreds of thousands of pounds as his company prepares to introduce a hosepipe ban tomorrow. The Environment Secretary, Steve Reed, criticised the pay package for Lawrence Gosden, branding it outrageous. According to Southern Water's annual report, Mr. Gosden, who's been at the helm since 2022, was awarded £691,000 this year as part of a long-term incentive plan. This is in addition to his fixed pay of £687,000 a year, bringing his total earnings to more than £1 million. Environment Secretary told the BBC's Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, trust between the customers and the water companies is at the lowest point probably ever. And by paying their senior executives rises of that kind, what messages are they sending to their customers? I don't think Southern Water has performed well enough for that kind of pay increase to be merited. The company was banned from paying bonuses last month following a Category 1 sewage spill in the New Forest, Hampshire, in August 2024. Southern Water has also faced criticism for its hosepipe ban that officially comes into force across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight on Monday. The company was also chastised for a huge water outage in December, which left almost 60,000 homes without water, some for 3 days. Under new rules, companies cannot pay bonuses if they fail to meet environmental, consumer, or financial standards, or if they're convicted of a criminal offence. Southern Water maintains that the payment to Mr. Gosden is not a bonus, but forms part of a long-term incentive plan set up in 2023. This is linked to a 2-year effort to improve the company's performance. A spokesman for Southern Water said Lawrence Gosden's 2025 package includes a relocation allowance and a long-term incentive plan paid by shareholders, which marks improvements made during the delivery of our turnaround plan. This criticism of Mr. Gosden's pay comes just ahead of the publication of an extensive review of the water industry, which is expected to propose major reforms to how the sector is regulated. Southern Water recently had to request an additional £2.1 billion from its owner, Australian investment firm Macquarie, to bolster its struggling finances. The company, which serves 4.7 million people across the south and southeast of England, has amassed nearly £9 billion of debt.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Pub licence conditions added after complaints. A Hampshire country pub has had a bevy of conditions added to its licence following noise complaints from its neighbours. Staff at the Rising Sun in Spring Lane, Colden Common, will have to patrol outside the pub from 8 p.m. every half hour to help tackle noise, as well as have only 3 outdoor music events each year, following Winchester City Council's licensing committee on Tuesday, July the 22nd. As previously reported, an application to review the pub's premises licence was submitted to the council by its environmental protection team after noise complaints against the pub were made by neighbours. Speaking to the subcommittee, City Councillor Sue Cook, ward member for Councillor Caldon Common and Twyford, argued against the pub's licence being retained. Addressing the committee on behalf of residents in her ward, she read the written representation submitted to the council from Francesca Santovito and Paul Gunter, both of Hill Lane. Councillor Cook continued, "With the long-term residents' context, the noise concerns, the parking and highway concerns from residents, it all raises doubts about the licence holder's ability to operate responsibly." Duncan Craig, a legal representative for the Rising Sun, said, "The pub is surrounded by 14 properties and the council has received representations from only two of them. 95% of the people who use the pub are from the village. The staff are from the village. It's a village boozer. There are people who live closer to the pub than the objectors who have not objected. Any step we take today needs to be proportionate." Mr. Craig added that the pub is four times busier than it was before the pub's owner and licence holder, Jonathan Spencer, took it on. Mr. Spencer said, "The last 12 months we've had no issues," adding that the pub is in open dialogue with residents. During the meeting, Councillor Brian Lemming, who was chairing the subcommittee, said, "I'm concerned that according to the public representations, people can identify the musical lyrics they can hear in their bedrooms." Mr. Spencer said, "I would much rather work with the residents than against them. We're not running this as a nightclub." The subcommittee decided that the Rising Sun should keep its licence, but has added several conditions. These conditions include that staff should patrol outside the pub every half hour after 8 p.m. until closing time. More signage erected in the pub asking visitors to be respectful of neighbours. No alcohol outside the pub after 10:30 p.m. Limit delivery to times after 8 a.m. and a maximum of 3 live music events outside the pub per year. These outside events are limited to a maximum of 4 hours of the musical performance and are to be no later than 8 p.m. The pub must also produce a noise management plan.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Residential project wins national award. A trauma-informed residential project supporting women and children has won a national award. Hope Street, based in Hampshire and run by the charity One Small Thing, received the top prize at the Robin Corbett Award for its innovative approach to diverting women from the criminal justice system. The programme provides a supportive, healing environment where women and their children can stay together while receiving specialist care and rehabilitation services. Lady Val Corbett, founder of the Robin Corbett Award, said, "In the 12th year of the award, the standard remains unerringly high. Our judges had to decide on a shortlist of 9, each with impressive stats supporting those released in giving their clients that crucial second chance. Discussions took time, but eventually our 3 winners were chosen, each one working in a different but vital field. Hope Street offers a trauma-informed, gender-specific alternative to custody, aiming to prevent maternal separation and reduce reoffending by supporting women and children to build positive futures." Claire Hubbersty, CEO of One Small Thing, said, "We are delighted to receive the Robin Corbett Award in recognition of the work we are doing at Hope Street, which aims to redesign the justice system for women and their children. Our team are overjoyed to see the hard work they are doing being recognised at a national level. We thank all those involved in the judging panel and want to congratulate all the other fantastic shortlisted organisations. As the award winner, Hope Street will receive £5,000, a glass plaque donated by the Timpson Group, and a copy of the book, A Life Well Lived, by Lady Corbett."
Thank you, Jackie. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Well, thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Deborah.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Bye-bye.
Jackie.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye.